Next up is Stephen Green. If you could go ahead and share your screen there, Stephen.
Okay.
And he'll be talking about Lorentz gauge reconstruction for Tucholsky solutions with sources in electromagnetism.
Okay. Thanks, Leanne, for the introduction, and thanks for letting me talk about this work. So this is very closely related to the talk that Barry gave, and it's just about how to include sources. So Barry already gave a very nice introduction to the problem, so I don't think I need to say a lot here. The basic problem is given a solution to the Tucholsky equations, how do you come up with a solution to the field equations? So how do you get, the vector potential A or the metric perturbation HAB in the Einstein case? So the history is, well, shortly, you know, after Tucholsky's paper, it was shown how to do this by Chernowski and Cohen and Kegeles and Wald. And the basic approach is they define a Hertz potential from the Weyl scalars and then take derivatives of that to get the metric perturbation or the Maxwell field. The issue, though, is that it gives you a solution in radiation gauge, and this isn't the most convenient gauge to be working in. And also, it doesn't work in the presence of sources. As we've seen in some previous talks, in the shadow of the source, the solution makes no sense. But that was the status of things for quite some time until very recently, when there's been a lot of renewed activity. So in the past couple of years, we've shown together with Stefan Hollands and Peter Zimmerman and Vahid Tumani how to include sources in this reconstruction, at least in the radiation gauge case. And the basic idea is we add this so-called corrector tensor that comes from the stress energy. Now, ultimately, one is interested in Lorentz gauge solutions in many cases. And one way that you could do this is first get a solution in the radiation gauge and then transform via gauge transformation into the Lorentz gauge. And Vahid has, and Peter and Stefan, we've come up with a way to do that, but it's not the easiest. It involves solving a double box equation in that setup. But there's been some recent work in the previous talk by Barry and Sam Dolan and Chris Kavanaugh on how to get solutions in Lorentz gauge directly from the Maxwell solution, from the Weyl scalars here. Now, this only, however, works in the Maxwell case, and there's been no progress really in the Einstein case. But this talk is going to be combining that work with the sources and showing how to do that. Now, before I really begin, I just want to set the stage because in terms of notation, because we found it very useful to use the differential form notation and exterior calculus to do all these calculations. So just to remind everybody what a differential form is, it's just a totally antisymmetric tensor. So here's a differential P form, omega. You can take products of differential forms. So the wedge product is just the product with all of the indices anti-symmetrized. You can take a so-called exterior derivative of a P form to get a P plus one form, just by anti-symmetrizing again. If you apply this operator twice, you get back zero. So D squared is equal to zero. There's also the Hodge dual operator where you contract a form with the totally anti-symmetric tensor. So this converts, for instance, a one form into a three form. And if you do this twice, you get back what you started with. And there's the co-differential operator. And this is just star D star. And it's essentially taking a divergence. And it also has the property that delta squared is equal to zero. So if you express electromagnetism in terms of differential forms, then you have your two form field FAB. And then you have your Maxwell equations. You have DF equals zero. And then you have your delta F equals J. That's your div F equals your current equation. Then you can define a one form A, and then F is given by D of that. And then you automatically have that DF is equal to zero because D squared equals zero. Okay. Now, it's also useful to introduce a so-called bivector basis. So I can take my two-form FAB and decompose it in this basis of these bivectors. And these are just these wedge products of the various Neumann-Penrose tetrad vectors. So we have three of them denoted X, Y, and Z here. I don't think that's the standard notation, but that's what we call them. And then their coefficients are the Maxwell scalars, phi 0, phi 1, phi 2. So that's a way of expressing it. Now, the x, y, z are so-called anti-self-dual bivectors. And this is because if you take the dual of x, you get back I times x. And the barred ones, or the complex conjugated ones, are self-dual because you get minus I of x bar if you take star of that. Now, that was a lot of work to write that down, but we actually get a lot of simplifications if we write the Tucholsky framework in terms of forms. So I can write in Tucholsky's paper, like, he took various derivatives of the field equations and combined them in various ways, and then eventually got out the Tucholsky equation. But this follows very naturally at the level of forms. So I can define an operator, my separability operator, S, just it's zeta to the minus 2, where zeta is psi 2 to the minus 1/3, d zeta squared. And if I apply this operator to my field equation, so this is delta F, I'm applying it to delta F, then I can look at the various components based on this basis decomposition. And I see, you know, the Tucholsky equations as the coefficient of x and the coefficient of z for phi 0 and phi 2. And I get the Fackerel-Ipser equation, which is the equation for phi 1 as a coefficient of y. And then if I look over here at the Tucholsky, at the self-dual parts, I find these expressions that are related to the Tucholsky-Starobinsky identities, but they're not quite right because, well, the sign of the phi two really has to be flipped here. But other than that, it's the Tucholsky-Starobinsky identity. So this simple operator encapsulates all of the manipulations in Tucholsky's work for electromagnetism. So it makes sense then to define this zeta to the minus 2 d zeta squared delta as an O operator. So I'm giving these kind of suggestive names in keeping with the Wald formalism. And I can keep doing that. I can say, well, F is dA, and I'll call that d operator tau. This gives you the field in terms of the potential, or t, sorry. It gives you the field in terms of the potential. And delta d, I'll call it E, because that's the field equation for A. So in terms of these operators on forms, in fact, the electromagnetic Wald identity is completely trivial, because I've written here SE equals OT, and the only difference is I've shifted the delta over to make it, instead of being part of E on the left-hand side, it's part of O on the right-hand side. And then you can use this and its edge adjoint for reconstruction. Okay, now I'm going to apply this to the source-free case that Barry talked about in his talk for Lorentz gauge reconstruction. We've done it in the source case, but it's more complicated, and I think it illustrates the main points enough just by dealing with the source-free case, how it really simplifies the calculations. Okay, so Barry talked about a Hertz 2 form, H, so that we can write as phi 0 times, this is a Hertz scalar times x plus phi 2 times z. And then A, in terms of differential forms, is just given by delta zeta H. This automatically is in Lorentz gauge because delta squared is equal to 0. So delta of A, using this definition, just gives you back 0. Now we can calculate the field strength, which is just d of A. So if I just plug in on the second line here, the definition, and then I see what I want to do here is I have this d delta appearing. And if I can push around the zetas, I can put this into an expression which has just the O operator in it, because I want to get back the equations of motion. So by just moving these zetas through the derivatives, I get zeta O of H. And then there's some leftover terms that come about from these commutations. And these have these time derivative terms that Barry mentioned, multiplying x and z, these basis elements. And also there's this other bit. All I wanted to note is that these terms are all anti-self-dual. And now we'll just look at the zeta O term a little bit more. So that, using the expression I had at the beginning of the talk, but plugging in for H, I have my Tucholsky equations for phi 0 and phi 2, and I have these Tucholsky-Starobinsky-like components in the self-dual part. Now, if I had phi 0, so now if phi 0 and minus phi 2 satisfy the Tucholsky-Starobinsky, then these self-dual parts of OH will all vanish, right? Because it's almost the Tucholsky-Starobinsky up to that sign swap. And then if that's true, then OH is anti-self-dual, and these remaining terms are all anti-self-dual. So F is anti-self-dual, and then it follows that F is equal to minus I star F, because it's anti-self-dual. And then if I put in my F in terms of A, I can just substitute in dA, then it follows automatically that delta F equals zero when I have a solution. So this game of just showing that, you know, various anti-self-dual or self-dual parts project out, and this is all, you know, how it works. And this is entirely consistent with the inversion relations that swap the signs from the phi zero and the phi two in the way that Barry described. And so that's the gist of the calculations. So to include sources, I'm just going to write down the results. So now when I have sources, the Hertz potential stays the same. And all I do is I add a corrector one form to A. So this corrector G is just related via time derivatives to the current J with, again, some sign swaps. It's a much more involved calculation, but it involves the same sort of principles. Just to conclude, we've shown how to include non-zero charge current as a source for Lorentz gauge reconstruction in electromagnetism. And this corrector is just related to J via time derivatives. The differential forms notation is very useful in calculations. And I think the most interesting question is the gravitational case and how can that be adapted? Because we're not working in terms of differential forms anymore. However, the Weyl tensor is kind of related to differential forms. And we could take, say, bivector components of this and then work maybe with three sets of differential forms. Okay, that's about it. And the goal, of course, is to simplify self-force calculations in the F. Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen, for that great talk. Does anybody have any questions on that? Let's see, Aditya, can I unmute?
Yeah, hi, those are some really interesting results. So I had a question regarding the role of the killing Yano tensor and the symmetry operators in all this. So have you looked at conservation laws or how the killing Yano tensor fits when sources are included?
Not really. I don't have a good answer for that. I mean, these are all interesting questions, but I don't exactly see how that would fit in with this framework. But yeah, I don't have a good answer.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Barry, are you able to go ahead?
Yeah, thanks, Stephen, for the talk. Just out of curiosity, that extra minus sign that appears in the 5.2, do you have any insight of why that's there?
It ultimately comes because you need to solve this. You need to set these sort of, you call them quasi or whatever, Tucholsky, Starobinsky identities. These need to vanish, and you're going to need a minus sign for that to work in the end. I think it just seems to be, it's needed to make it work. You probably found the same thing though. I don't have a good intuition for why.
Yeah, we find we needed it there, but we didn't understand why.
Because basically, if you wanted to go back to this, these identities, right, that this O operator gives you, all the Tucholsky expressions, what you could have done in the first place is perform the swap of some components of delta F and then apply the operator. And that would have given you your Tucholsky-Starobinsky identities, which have to vanish. Basically, if you don't have that minus sign, the construction won't work. That's probably all you found too.
Yeah. Thanks. I guess I'm curious because we need to do something similar for the gravitational case. We have to figure out similar green bits.
Yeah. The gravity, it's so much harder because you have also these extra derivatives, and I just don't see how it works. But. Mm-hmm.